Okay, so now that we've finished off the genetics part of the course, we're going to start on our first crop of the year. So we're going to do a catch crop called kale. It's chapter 15 on page 231. So, a little bit about catch crops to begin with. A catch crop is a crop that can be grown quite quickly. We usually grow it in between two main crops. So say, for example, if you have a gap between harvesting one and sowing the next, and you have a couple of months of a gap, we don't want to leave that field fallow or empty. Because if we leave it empty, what's going to happen is weeds are going to end up inside in the field. Okay, so we avoid that by putting other crops that will grow quickly into the field during that time. Okay, so we call those catch crops. So on page 231, mark your definition of a catch crop. It says it's a fast-growing crop grown between two main crops when land would otherwise lie idle, and they're also known as a fodder crop. Now, the reason they're used as a fodder crop is it's basically a feed for the animals. So kale, even though I know now if you go into any restaurants or whatever, they'll have kale salads, or inside an Aldi or Dunn's, they'll have kale inside in the press for humans. It was originally an animal feed, the idea being that it could be used as a winter feed or as a bulking agent for the animals. So mark that, the first line underneath it, cultivated primarily for animal feed. And then underline, it's usually incorporated into a crop rotation where they can provide some quickly grown livestock feed. Now, the idea of that is we rotate what's in a field year after year after year because we don't want a pest or a disease to build up in the field. Okay, so each time that we put something growing in a field, we make sure it's different from what was there the previous time, because some pests and diseases will be present from when the last crop was there, and if we sow the same thing again, they'll attack it. Okay, so think that there are specific diseases and pests that affect certain crops. And if we keep swapping what crop is there, it confuses the pests so that they can't attack it. Okay, so it gives the example then of a gap between the harvest of winter sown barley and sowing a spring lay will give farmers the opportunity to put down a catch crop, providing additional winter feed. Fodder means feed, just in case you're getting confused with that. Or the other option we can do is ploughing the catch crop back into the soil that can help to improve soil structure. So mark that much. So the idea of ploughing it back into the soil. So let's say if we're talking about kale, we leave the kale to grow, and then once it's ready, we plough it back into the soil. So all the nutrition that's inside in the kale is now in the soil, and it'll have major benefits for the soil in terms of making it stronger and binding it together, but also in terms of making it more fertile and just a better quality soil overall. Now, in case people don't know what a lay is, mark what that is at the side of the page there. A field sown by farmers which is temporary in nature. So a lay is very much something that's going to be dug up again and something new put down. It's not permanent pasture. So permanent pasture would be basically grass that's going to be there forevermore. The grass is going to be... you'd take care of the fertility of the soil and you'd do soil tests in a permanent pasture. With a temporary lay, you're constantly swapping out things. So if the rotation is good, you need less management to try to take care of the fertilizers because you're removing different things from the soils by using different crops. So a common exam question that comes up then, they'll ask you to outline what a catch crop is, give an example of a catch crop, and then identify the advantages of growing catch crops. So let's mark these. They're fast growing, which is important. High yielding means they'll produce a lot of them. Provides farmers with additional winter feed with a high dry matter content, so less risk of fodder shortage in winter months. That basically means there's less of a chance of the farmer running out of winter feed. So say, for example, if they didn't have an awful lot of silage, which is preserved grass, if they don't have a lot of preserved grass in a particular year, they might opt to grow something like kale in the meantime, because that kale then can be used as feed for the animals in winter to supplement the silage. And when it says high dry matter content, it basically means that it's a very rich food. It's a good quality feed. It's not just a watery type food. Okay, it reduces winter feed costs then. Fewer concentrates need to be purchased, so that's obviously important. The less we can spend, the higher the profit's going to be. The feed is fully traceable because we've grown it ourselves. We know exactly what's going into it. That would be particularly important if you're talking about organic farming and talking about a farmer trying to produce organic feed. It's a break crop between grass and cereals. So what we mean by that is grass and cereals can have similar pests. And so by putting a different crop in between the two of them, it stops or breaks the life cycle of a lot of those pests and diseases. Helps to prevent nitrogen leaching. So the term to leach means to be lost out of the soil. So if you imagine if you apply slurry or fertilizer onto the soil, some of that is going to kind of seep out of the soil and end up going into waterways. Whereas if you have something growing in the field, it's going to suck up the nitrogen from the field, and so we won't end up losing any of it. As we've said before, it's an early bite for animals. So that means it's additional feed, basically. And crops like kale have a high protein content, which means they're very good for the growth and development of the animal. So that's basically going through the list of all the advantages of using it. And now the disadvantages. First one, obviously, it's labor intensive. It's doing something that you don't necessarily have to do. It says, especially if it's strip or zero grazed. So strip grazed would mean that I'd leave the animals into the field bit by bit. So I'd section off the field into different parts and I'd leave them into part one of the field, leave them graze it fully, then move them to the second part of the field, leave them graze it fully, then third part of the field, graze it fully. So that's quite labor intensive. Or zero grazing means the animals are inside in the shed. I cut the grass for them and I bring it in to them. So that's zero grazing, as in you're not allowing the animals to graze at all. We bring it to them instead. The second point then, they can be low in fiber. So hay or silage must be fed with the catch crop. The third one, it's vulnerable to attack from pests and diseases. You have to do a crop rotation. The fourth one, it's uneconomical to plough a productive perennial ryegrass pasture for sowing a catch crop unless reseeding is planned. Now, that sounds complicated, but all it means is, let's say if on your farm you have permanent pasture, you will never plough that up to put down kale to then have to reseed the entire pasture, because it would be ridiculous. Okay, the cost involved in reseeding is about 150 euro an acre. Okay, so you would never do that for a little bit of extra feed. You would only do it, as we say, if it's a temporary lay that you have. So if it's a field that you're constantly rotating crops in, then it makes sense. The next one then, there's a risk of poaching the land if a catch crop is grazed in situ during wet winter months and heavy soil. What that means is poaching means that you're compacting down the soil. So if you imagine if you have heavy animals like what you'd have with your cows, maybe 600 kgs walking over the surface of the soil in wintertime, they'll compress and compact that down. And so what will end up happening is the soil will become waterlogged and it'll become a very unhealthy field. Okay, so that's why sometimes we would do the zero grazing, where we'd cut the food for them ourselves and then bring it in to them in their sheds. The last point then, iodine deficiency can occur when they're fed on brassica crops and chemicals produced by the plants can inhibit the uptake of iodine in animals. So it's something we need to be careful about. We're trying to avoid the deficiency, so we make sure that we're not just feeding them kale on its own, or we're not feeding them a high percentage of kale, that it's only a boost to their feed. Okay, so that's the definition of a catch crop and then the advantages and disadvantages of it. The next part then is basically going through kale as a crop itself. Okay, so kale then, underline it, has a longer growing season than stubble turnip. Now, what that means, turnip again used to be a feed only for animals. Now it's something that you'd have in your supermarkets as well. So usually what we would do with stubble turnip is allow the animals to eat that in situ, so allow them into the field and graze it down. Kale takes a little bit longer than turnip to grow. So you're looking at between 5 and 6 months in order for kale to be fully complete. Okay, so that's the first thing that you need to make sure that you have that time. You have the 5 to 6 months in your schedule between your two crops that you're normally growing. Then underline, must be sown between April and early July. That's basically if you're going to use it as winter feed. And then underline, it gives its maximum yield after growing for 5 to 6 months. It has a deep root system with good tolerance to drought. It can be susceptible to club root. Now that's one of the diseases we're going to go on to at the end of this. An attack by insect pests, but it's not as badly affected as other crops may be. So anytime that you're talking about any crop, it's going to be susceptible to disease. Like that's one of the risks, and the same thing, it'll be affected by parasites and pests. But we just need to manage it as best we can by either practicing a rotation, so making sure that it's not the same thing, isn't growing in the same field year after year. And also there's sprays that we can use, things like pesticides and herbicides, fungicides that'll kill off whatever is there. Okay, the next thing then is its growth cycle. So underline that it's a biennial plant. That means, so we have annuals, perennials and biennials. So a perennial is something that'll grow year after year after year after year. An annual will just come up, have its life cycle and die, and then it's gone. And a biennial, it'll have 2 years where it'll grow year after year. Okay. And then the bottom of that page, then it's basically going through the growth stages. So starting as a small seed, growing into a seedling, producing its true leaves, then it'll be harvest, then you allow it to grow again, and then basically the plant will start to decline, so it won't be as good the second time round. Okay, so very little there that you need to know. The types of questions then that come up, so the first thing they'll ask is, what type of soil would kale grow best in? So underline, under soil suitability on page 233, grows best on free draining loam or sandy soil with a pH between 6 and 7. Land must be suitable for grazing if a farmer plans to graze the kale in situ. Otherwise, zero grazed. Now, what that means, so if you're going to bring the animals into the field, then we need to know that the field isn't going to be damaged. Now, our technical term for damage is poached. So we need to make sure that the field isn't going to be poached as a result of the animals being on it. So we need to make sure that the field is good enough for the animals to walk on, or else we have the option to zero graze it, which means we'll go out into the field, we'll harvest it, and we'll bring it into the animals and feed it to them in the shed. Now, there is a third option. Underline, it can be baled like silage to produce kaleage. So same concept here, that we basically bale it, make sure there's no oxygen present. And then what's going to happen as a result of that is it'll preserve itself so that it can be used as a winter feed. Okay, then go down to the bullet points and underline the ideal site for kale production would be land with free draining soil that dries out quickly, relatively flat land, land that has not been sown with a brassica crop in the last 4 years, that's to prevent disease, land that is not close to a water course, and land where grassland productivity has decreased. Now, the reason why we do it, if grassland productivity has decreased, it means that we're looking to plough it up, so we're not ruining it for nothing. OK, Okay. The seedbed preparation then, underline a soil test should be carried out 8 weeks prior to sowing. Now the idea here is we will test to see, is everything that's in the soil, what's the word that I'm using for this? Basically, have we all the nutrients that we need to grow the crop? So a soil test is similar to a blood test. It'll basically test the soil to see what it's deficient for, and then it'll show up what we need to apply. So then we'll be able to decide what fertilizer we'll use as a result. Then underline, if the land was previously used for pasture, the sward should be killed off by spraying glyphosate, which is basically a weed killer to kill off anything that would have been left growing in the soil, because we don't want something already established there competing with a new crop. Then underline, usually the land is ploughed and then parrow harrowed to produce the seedbed, and kale can be broadcast or it can be sown with a precision drill or by direct drilling. Now what that means is we can either scatter it across the soil surface, that's broadcast, or by direct drilling means that it's with a machine, it's pushed down into the soil and you can select how much space there is in between each seed and also how deep it goes. So that's why we call it precision drilling, because it's a lot more accurate and you waste less seed. Then underline, the seeds are sown at a depth of 10 meters. Now the idea there is we're pushing it down 10 millimeters. Sorry, I think I said meters there, 10 millimeters. And then roll after sowing to ensure good soil seed contact. So rolling, it's essentially like passing a massive barrel over the surface of the soil to push all the seeds down into the soil so that they'll grow, so that they have contact with the water in the soil so that they can grow. Okay, and then underline two lines down, the target population is 70 plants per meter squared. So that's just telling us the amount we want. On the next page, then it talks about the different types of kale that you could use, the different types of seeds that we could use. And that's basically you pick it based on what characteristics you want. So if you have a look at, let's say, the Caledonian, the first one there, it says it'll have good yield with short winter hardy variety, high leaf to stem ratio, and it's suitable for dairy and beef cattle. As opposed to the Grampian, the last one, excellent autumn or winter feed for both sheep and dairy cows, very high dry matter with some club root resistance. So you decide then based on your field. So say, for example, if I had issues with club root before, then I might pick Grampian as my seed because it will be able to resist the seed some bit. Okay, have a look at the diagram then showing whether it would be used in dairy and beef or whether it would be used for sheep. So for dairy and beef, we're looking for taller, thick-stemmed varieties with high yields. So either the Caledonian or the Grampian. And the sheep and lambs, then we're looking for more leafy varieties with a short growing season. So that would be the Keeper or the Maris Kestrel. Okay, so it's basically just outlining how, the same as you've different types of grasses, you've different types of kales as well. On the top of the next page, then it goes through the rotation. So basically we're saying, how often can I grow this in one field? So underline the second line, should not be grown continuously in the same field. That goes the same for every single crop. It should be incorporated in a 5-year rotation. And to note that varieties with club root resistance are available. Now what that means is we can choose to pick one that's going to have resistance to disease. Okay, so the next part then, we've spoken about the rotation and said about the 5-year rotation. The next bit then is about fertilizer requirements. So as we said, we'd take a soil test, we'd send that off, and then it would come back with what the soil needs. And then we'd apply that in a fertilizer. So let's mark what the soil may need. Underline, soil tests should be carried out to determine the fertilizer application. All fertilizer can be applied before sowing. Now, there's other ways of doing it. Some people will do half and half, but for now, we'll just say all applied before sewing. And then mark on the next, we'll say skip a line, and on the next line, you may need sulfur. And then skip a line on the next line, you may need boron. And then underline soil test results may also highlight deficiencies in other trace elements, which should be applied where necessary. So the test results that come back, you will decide then what you need to add to the soil. Then under weed control, so it's very important that you wouldn't have anything competing with the plant that you're trying to grow. So say, for example, if you're trying to grow kale, we don't want any weeds competing with the kale, because that's going to reduce their potency or their growth. So underline an excellent seed bed and vigorous early growth leads to well-established kale. That's important, because if we get the kale growing well, then we don't need to worry about anything else coming in and competing with it, because once something is well established, you're not going to have anything else competing with it. Underline this helps to control weeds within the crop. But if we need to, then we may have to apply a herbicide, which is just a chemical. Some of you would have applied these at home, something like Roundup, just a chemical to kill off any weeds that would be in the soil. So underline weeds controlled by application of herbicide. And then in the next paragraph, sprayed with a pre-emergent herbicide prior to cultivation can reduce the incidence of broadleaf weeds, and post-emergent may also be used to control broadleaf weeds. So pre-emergent basically means I spray the field before the crop is growing, and post-emergent once it's growing. So we may have to do two different sprays of it to try to kill off anything that may start to grow. Next section then is our pests. So these are anything that may be burrowing holes or eating into the kale that we'll need to keep an eye out and possibly treat for. So the first one is the flea beetle. Underline, it can cause considerable damage to young seedlings. Holes eaten in the stems and leaves. And then the last line before the photos, crops can be sprayed with a contact insecticide. Now, an insecticide is basically a chemical that's going to kill off any insects. So we kind of have a balance to strike here. So we want to kill off certain things, but we don't want to apply loads of chemicals to the crops. Okay, so we'd only do that if there was a lot of it. On the next page then, the diamondback moth. Underline, the caterpillar of it causes damage to the crop. It lays its eggs on the underside of the leaves, and when they hatch, the caterpillars will feed on the leaves of the crop. Again, it's a contact insecticide to control it. So again, it's applying chemicals onto it to kill them off. Okay, now we've been speaking about clubroot as we went through it, so we might as well go through that now. It's a disease that's basically going to affect the kale or threaten the kale and every other member of the brassica family as well. So all other crops will also be subject to this. You'll see this as we're going through all the other crops as well. So third line down, underline, it's a soil-borne fungus. So control of it is by using a rotation. So as we were saying before, with the pests and the diseases, it's the same thing. If you don't have a certain crop in a field repeatedly, then the diseases are going to leave that field. So underline, avoid growing kale on any fields which have a history of it. And plant resistant varieties. So if they're resistant, they're not going to be as likely to pick up the disease. Underline the symptoms then at the next paragraph. It causes the roots to swell and reduces their ability to absorb water and nutrients, causing the plant to wilt. And eventually affected roots will rot, reducing the yield of the crop. Then underline, the spores can remain in the soil for up to 20 years. Now, why we're saying that is basically, if it's going to stay in the soil for up to 20 years, it's something we constantly need to be vigilant of. We need to be mindful that that could affect it. Okay, the feeding of it then, we've spoken about this already. So it can be grown, grazed in situ if the land is good, or we may need to zero graze it if there's issues with the land. Okay, so just underline that. It can be zero grazed, strip grazed, or ensiled. Strip grazing is the most popular method. An electric fence is used, allowing a space of 3 meters per cow. And the crop should be grazed in long, narrow strips, allowing all animals to graze at the same time and to minimize trampling of the crop. This maximizes utilization and minimizes wastage. So what we want are the strips big enough so that the animals can graze all together at the one time, taking the maximum amount of feed out of it. Then underline, should be introduced to the crop slowly. As with any change in diet, we don't want the animal to have a massive influx of it into their diet, because all that's going to happen in that case is it's going to cause their stomachs to get upset. So we want to slowly introduce it into them 1 or 2 hours a day and build it up over the course of a week, okay, so that their bodies get used to it. Then underline, it should form no more than 70% of the diet, with 30% coming from silage, hay or straw. And they should have access to roughage. So that's basically to allow their bodies to adapt to both types of feed. And then the next paragraph, excessive amounts of kale lead to anemia, causes nutritional red water in livestock. It damages their red blood cells, releasing hemoglobin. It appears in the urine. To prevent this happening, livestock should be gradually introduced to kale and should not be grazed if it's in flower, because it's more common then. And then the last little bit about the nutrition of it, it's high in calcium but low in phosphorus, manganese and iodine. So mineral supplements are provided with the livestock. So you may need to just supplement their diet slightly. On the next page then, it's giving you the yields. So the average dry matter yield is 8 to 10 tons per hectare and 60 to 65 tons per hectare of the fresh yield. The last little bit then that we'll do is the benefits of grazing kale, so reducing winter costs. A lot of these are similar to the advantages of a catch crop. Reducing labour and machinery required for feeding and silage production. Allows livestock to overwinter outdoors, meaning that they can feed outdoors. High crude protein content, it's economical to grow, meaning it's cheap to grow. And it contributes to sustainability through acting as a cover crop when land would otherwise lay fallow, preventing soil erosion, reducing nitrogen leaching, increasing soil organic matter, and contributing to biodiversity. And the last little part then is any health and safety risks that we need to take into account. So this is the same as with all other things. So you can mark ensure all machinery are in good working order and guards in place. Wearing protective clothing and goggles and gloves when you're spraying any of the chemicals. Ensure all machinery is switched off if you're tending to a blockage. That's basically to stop any hands from getting caught in it. And take care when moving livestock from when strip grazing, making sure that all boundary fencing in the strip grazed field is adequate. So the idea there is that we're basically taking care of ourselves and other animals on the farm to make sure that you're not going to have an accident with machinery. And again, to be careful whenever we're freeing up anything that may be trapped in case there was... in case an arm or a body part got trapped into the machine. Okay, so that finishes up our first catch crop that we're going to do on kale. What I'd like you to do now is if you go and do the questions on page 239.